So why does Hasara B'Tevis important, and why might Hasara B'Tevis be something to look forward to? So the Hasara B'Tevis story begins with we're going to be surveying several different Sifrei Tanakh. We begin with one of the last. We begin with one of the last Nevi'im to live. We've had the chance to talk in the past about the fact that Kadosh Baruch Hu was ready to end Nevuah before the Bayis Sheni period, the end of the Bayis Rishon period, over the course of Galus Bavel, when the Jews, perhaps when the Jews were largely unwilling to return to Eretz Yisrael. Gemara in Zvachim says that Kadosh Baruch Hu said, we're going to give them three more Nevi'im. We should have ended Nevuah already. Well, but Kadosh Baruch Hu says, we'll give them three more Nevi'im, the three final Nevi'im that will enable the Jewish people to return to Eretz Yisrael and enable the building of the Beis HaMikdash, the building of the second Beis HaMikdash. Those three Nevi'im are Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. They appear, as you know, at the end of Trei Asar. Trei Asar does not correspond to one particular time or one particular place. The Gemara in the Bava Basra tells us that Trei Asar are 12 different Nevi'im, who each of whom only have a small amount of their Nevuah in Tanakh. We don't necessarily know that they only said a small number of Nevuahs. They may have, or they may have said hundreds of Nevuahs, but either way, only a small quantity of their spoken Nevuah is admitted into the Tanakh. Spoken many times by the Gemara Megillah, the Nevuah Shel Hutzrach El Daras Nichtava, Nevuah Shel Hutzrach El Daras Lo Nichtava. And there were many, the vast majority of Nevuah that was recited to the Jewish people over the course of the 1,000 years of Jewish Nevuah, from Moshe to Malachi, vast majority of it does not appear in Tanakh. It was important at the time, but does not have eternal value, so it doesn't appear in the Tanakh. So here you have 12 Nevi'im, each of whom have a small amount of their Nevuah is going to make it into Tanakh. So the Gemara says, Anshei Es HaGedola decide to take them and form them into a single Sefer. They appear separately. V'al-pi halacha, they constitute Hosea, Tzafanya, Nachum, all these different Nevi'im, together with the last three, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, together constitute one Sefer. Only as Kedusha Sefer if you have all 12 of them written together. I did Zutri Mirkasi. But they span an enormous amount of time. What binds them together is they're all small. So the Chacham decided to put them into one Sefer to give it a little more heft. But they span. Hosea lives before Yeshayahu. Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi live long after all the other members of the Trei Asar. They live the beginning of the Bayis Sheni period. And there, as I mentioned before, all bringing the Jewish people back to Eretz Yisrael, encouraging them and giving them perspective and strategy and focus in terms of moving forward with a Bayis Sheni project. Of the three, Haggai and Malachi are very short. Zechariah is much longer. Zechariah is known for a number of things. A lot of very, very vivid images, and a lot of mystery, and a fair amount of Shakla Vataria. Just a week ago, the Haftarah for Shabbos Chanukah had all three of those. It's one of the few Haftarahs that we lay more than once a year. His vision of the menorah, it's like almost like a Rube Goldbergish. I mean, he sees the menorah, and it's like there are olive trees on top, and they drip oil drips into the bowls, and it goes through the tubes, and it's sort of like a perpetual motion menorah. And it just keeps going, and it's a very striking image, very vivid image. The Pesukim describe this whole machine attached to the menorah, and the Pesukim also determine in terms of mystery and Shaka Vitaria, the Pesukim actually describe, as Zechariah looks at this and says to the Malach, "What does this mean?" And the Malach says, "Well, don't you know?" He says, "Well, obviously not. That's why I asked you." So the Malach ultimately gives them an explanation. The explanation itself requires explanation. The explanation itself is ambiguous. Now is not time for a Hanukkah shiur. Now is not time for, we're not going to learn that paragraph of Zechariah. But here's another passage in Zechariah that also has mystery and also has Shaka Vitaria. Zechariah has yet another Shaka Vitaria that we're not going to deal with. He's the one who gives a Bechina. He's the one who gives a halacha bechina to the Kohanim. The Goran Pesachim talks about that passage in Zechariah. As you're coming back, we're going to build the Beis HaMikdash. You have to know, are you ready? Do you know your Tum Vatara? That's what the Chafetz Chaim said. If we're actually serious about wanting, yearning for Mashiach, yearning for Beis HaMikdash, see, peace of the Yeshua says, really? You're so excited by the Beis HaMikdash. Let's say there was a Beis HaMikdash tomorrow. Would you know what to do? Here we go. Get started. What do you do first? Practical kachim. So that's what the Chassam Chaim said. We got to put our money where our mouth is. He wrote a series of svarim to enable a renaissance of learning kachim and of learning kachim alach l'maisa. He wrote his own pseudo riff on all of all the kachim sugyas. He reprinted several achronim on kachim. He worked hard on this. So Zachariah has that discussion with the kohenim. You want based on mitzvahs? Let's talk about the Chassam of Batara. I won the only, maybe the only exam. No blue books, but Ki'ilu, mentioned in Tanakh. Gemara has a machlokes where the pastor failed. But here we come to a third shock of Atariya. They ask Zachariah, and Perek Zion mentions the question, Ha'evke, Tzoma Asiri, should I be, this is in the fourth year of Dayavish HaMelech, of the emperor Dayavish, the Persian emperor. So they reach out to him, and the question is, in Perek Zion, should I be fasting in the fifth month? Kasher Asisi Zek HaMashan. Like I've been doing for many years. What's the fifth? Which is the fifth month? Close. One before Ellis. Right? Should I be fasting in Tisha B'Av? We've been fasting for so many years. They were fasting in Tisha B'Av throughout the period of Gaul's Bavel. Should they continue to fast now that we're moving towards Gula Ganav based on Mikdash? Do we still fast? Do we not still fast? How does that work? So a parak later, Zechariah provides the answer. Here it is, parak ches pasuk yutes. Ko amar Hashem tzvakos. So says the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Tzom harvi, v'tzom hachamishi. Tzom hashvi, v'tzom hasiri. The fast of the fourth, the fifth, the seventh, and the tenth. The fifth month we say is Av. The fourth month, therefore, is Tammuz. The seventh month, obviously, is Tishrei, and the tenth month is Teves. Right? Shiva Subatama, that's what we would call. Shiva Subatama's Tisha B'Av, Tzom Gedalia, and Asar B'Teves. But you'll notice he didn't say it as briefly as I did. He didn't just say the fast of the fourth, the fifth, the seventh, the tenth. He said the fast of the fourth, the fast of the fifth, the fast of the seventh, the fast of the tenth, clearly stressing which word? Tzom. You base Yisrael l'sasim l'simcha l'moedim tovim. It'll be, in the future, a source of opportunity for simcha. It'll be a yomtif for Kal Yisrael v'ha'emes v'ha'shalom ehavu. Love, truth, and peace. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah Daf Yud Ches points out that this is a pretty ambiguous answer. Is it are you stressing fast, 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 fast? Simcha. And then if you look to the surrounding psukim, the Gemara points out, there seems to be a third answer also. It almost seems as though the question was, should we fast or not? And the answer was all three possible answers. Yes, no, and sort of. Which one is it? Is it Tzom, or is it Sasim Simcha, or is it somewhere in between? So Gemara Rosh Hashanah, I think we may have discussed this some Gedali time. Gemara Rosh Hashanah says, the Gemara Rosh Hashanah Daf Yud Ches Beis is the epicenter in Talmud Bavli of the discussion about the tzomos that relate to the Churban, leaving out Yom Kippur and Tanis Esther, but these four tzomos that relate to the Churban. So Gemara Rosh Hashanah Daf Yud Ches Beis near the top says it sounds like there are three answers. The answer was yes, it's a Yom Tif, or no, it's actually a tzom, or sort of. So Gemara says, well, how do you make sense of the three-way stira? And the answer is, obviously, it depends. Right? The answer is, it depends on the cases. Sometimes, some periods in Jewish history, tzom, some periods in Jewish history, sasim simcha, and some periods in Jewish history, neither one is mandatory. At a time of Shema, at a time of terrible persecution of Jewish people, these are all mandatory fasts. At a time of Shalom, at a time we have the Beis HaMikdash, let's say, Sasim l'simcha, it's a Yom Tov. Mechana Mikdash put out a brief video leading up to this past Tisha B'Av where they played out. Like a boy gets up in the morning and it's the ninth of Av and he walks outside. Everyone's saying happy ninth to each other. He sees a guy who looks very religious eating a sandwich in the street. And then, what's going on? And then all of a sudden you see in the distance, like the fog, you know, parts. You see the top of the base of Mikdash in the distance. And then the boy wakes up. And the boy wakes up and it's Tisha B'Av and there's no Beis HaMikdash. It's time to go to Kinos. But that's exactly this Gemara. Less is level, we'll have the Beis HaMikdash, it's going to be a Yom Tov. And the Gemara says, when it's in between, when it's neither or, but with neither nor, it's not Shmad, it's not Shalom, so then, Ratzu Misanim, Ratzu Emesam. You want to fast, Gevaldik, you don't want to fast, not obligated. So that's yes, no, and sort of. Gemara and the post can point out that we live nowadays, certainly we live in a Ratzu Misanim, Ratzu Emesam, we live in that intermediate phase, Baruch Hashem, not a time of Shmad. That's why the Minig Yisrael has been for the last 1,000 years or more, that the way we handle the optional fast is we do it somewhat. That's why we do fast. Mitam Minig, we're mechayiv to fast on Aser B'Tevis and so forth, but only halfway. Only halfway quantitatively, we only fast during the day, not at night. And only halfway qualitatively, we only refrain from eating and drinking, but not from the other four inuyim. We don't refrain from Rechitza, Sicha, Nilsa Sandal, or Tashvish Hamita. There were, I think, Gedol Yisrael, it was reported that during, as recently as during the Holocaust, Gedol Yisrael, who were not living in Eastern Europe, who kept all of the Tzomos, like Tisha B'Av, because they felt that at that point in Jewish history, it wasn't optional, it was obligatory. That was Shashmad. So it was Mamish Me'ikar Adin. With Me'ikar Adin, you have to keep all these Tzomos fully. Leilo Kiyomo and all the Chamishinun. Baruch Hashem, we live in a time where it's not Shashmad. You know, we do not, unfortunately, yet live in a time of Gula Shleima. So we, for us, Me'ikar Adin, it's optional. That's why Minhag Yisrael says that we keep it partially. Now, Zechariah doesn't give us a lot of details in terms of the date. He just says which month. You look at Malachim Beis, the very end of Malachim Beis, you already get a sense of more precise dating. Shnas Atshiyus Lamocho, Chodesh Asiri Be'asar Lachodesh. This is the 9th year of the reign of Tzidkiyahu HaMelech. This is the very, very, very end of Sefer Malachim. Malachim is all about, Rav Yigal Ariel points out, Yigal Ariel is a Rav of the Moshav called Nov in the Golan Heights, and he was, I think by now he's retired, but he was for years, probably for decades, a very, very beloved Rebbe in the Midrashah in Chespin. I think he's particularly known for his Tanakh Shiurim, which over the years have been turned into a series of very, very appealing Sfarim. So I think it's an introduction to Sefer on Shmuel, where he lays out Shoftim. Shoftim is about the local leadership. In general, the Shoftim don't seem to be in charge of all the Shvatim. Sounds like they're local. Sefer Shmuel already you see national leaders, but no dynasty. The four major leaders in Sefer Shmuel are Eli, and Shmuel, Shaul, and David. None of whom in Sefer Shmuel pass on their leadership position to their children. Eli does not pass on to Chafni Pinchas. Shmuel does not pass on to his children. Shaul does not pass on to any of his children in any significant way. And David HaMelech, within the context of Sefer Shmuel, there's no dynasty. In the context of Sefer Shmuel, the one son who tries to take the reins forcibly is Avshalom, and has, as we know, an ignominious end. David HaMelech does pass on his reign to his son at the beginning of Sefer Malachim. Right? The coup, attempted coup by Don Yahu, and the confirmation that Shlomo is the correct heir, and that begins the dynasty of Malchus Beis David, that becomes the axis that stretches throughout all of Sefer Malachim. From the very beginning of the Sefer, which opens with the first stage in the passing of, you know, the transformation of David from an individual king to the founder of the dynasty of Malchus Beis David, all the way through until the last king of Malchus Beis David, Tzidkiyahu HaMelech, who is the king under whom the first Beis HaMikdash is, Yushalayim is sacked, the first Beis HaMikdash is destroyed in the closing psukim of Sefer Malachim. As you know, as an aside, for much of Sefer Malachim, you have the cutting back and forth between the parallel, between the any given Melech of Malchus Beis David and the parallel king in the north in the Malchus Yisrael. So here you are at the very end, the last king, Tzidkiyahu HaMelech, for a couple of kings now. The Eretz Yisrael has not really been a free country, it's been a vassal state of some superpower or another. And the final one
is Babel. Nebuchadnezzar has already deposed the previous puppet king, who was Yechaniah. You talk about him, you know about him in Megillas Esther, if from nowhere else. There was an earlier Galus Yechaniah. Yechaniah was not a loyal enough puppet to Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar gets rid of him, and you have the Galus Yechaniah, during which Mordechai goes into Galus, and Daniel, Chanan, Mishael, Azaria go into Galus, Yechezkel goes into Galus. Psukim talk about the Cherish and Maskir, which Gemara understands to be the Torah aristocracy. Of Kal Yisrael largely go into Galus with Galus Yechaniah. But the majority of population remain in Eretz Yisrael under a new king installed by Nebuchadnezzar, King Tzidkiyahu, who was at first more loyal to Nebuchadnezzar, but after a couple of years decides to flex his muscles and assert his independence. Yirmiyahu tells him, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to give you that strength. It's not going to work. You're making a mistake. And Tzidkiyahu tries anyways. And unfortunately, Yirmiyahu lives to see his words come true. See, here it's in the ninth year of Malchus Tzidkiyahu. Nebuchadnezzar shows up. Vahi b'shnas ha-tshiyas l'malchu. Here we are, Malachim Beis Perichavei. The opening psukim, the 25th parak. In the ninth year of the reign of Tzidkiyahu, b'cholosh ha-asir b'asol chodesh. It's the 10th month, the 10th day, otherwise known as Sar B'Teves. Nebuchadnezzar melech bavel hu v'chol chel Yerushalayim. Nebuchadnezzar shows up with his army, v'yichan aleha, they encamp around the city of Yerushalayim, v'yivnu aleha dayek savi, they begin to build siege fortifications. They begin to dig in all the way, v'tavoha ira matzor arashteyes reishan al melech Tzidkiyahu. They're going to continue that siege through the 11th year of Melech Tzidkiyahu. It's going to be a long haul. The psukim say it becomes very, very. The famine begins to build in the city. It's becoming very, very difficult. Yirmiyahu tells that story in two places. Yirmiyahu Gemara and Bava Basra tells us Bava Basra Tezvav. The Gemara talks about who wrote which sefer of Tanakh. The Gemara says Yirmiyahu wrote Sefer Melachim and Eicha and his own sefer, right? Sefer Yirmiyahu. So here in Yirmiyahu Perek Nun Beis, almost identical. Again, the ninth year of the reign of Tzidkiyahu, Asar B'Teyas, Bar Nebuchadnezzar, Melech Bavahu, V'chol Chelo, etc., etc. So that already gives us that sense of what the story is, and that's the Gemara of Shoshana David Ches points out, that Tzom HaAsiri, that Zechariah so mysteriously refers to, was a Tzom that marks the lane of the siege that happened on Asar B'Teves. Now here's something fascinating. Now, one question you might ask yourself, number one is, okay, so it's sort of not a happy day, but it doesn't seem quite like the same as, I don't know, Shavas B'Tamuz, Tisha B'Av, even Tzom Gedalia. It was Mamash Churban happened in those days. Right? Shavas B'Tamuz is when they break through, and in the first base, the destruction of the first base of Mikdash was Tes Tamuz, the second base of Mikdash was Shavas B'Tamuz, and they break into Yerushalayim and begin to destroy Yerushalayim. Right? And they begin to march towards the base of Mikdash. Tisha B'Av, obviously. And even Tzom Gedalia. That's the extinguishing of the, as we spoke about a couple months ago, that's the extinguishing, the assassination of Gedalia, of so many other Jews, and that's the extinguishing of the last remnants of any sort of organized Jewish community in Eretz Yisrael, post-Bais Rishon. But Asar B'Teves, nothing happened on Asar B'Teves. Things happened afterwards. Not that much happened. I mean, it was scary, for sure, but what are you fascinated about? Aleph. That's question number one. Number two, take a look at the following. We were in Yirmiyahu Nun Beis. If you jump back, and Yirmiyahu Nun Beis, right, was surveying over like a year and a half at least, or more, of time. Right, from the Shana Chiyas all the way until the Shana, from the ninth year to the 11th year. If you jump back 20 prakim from Yirmiyahu Nun Beis to Yirmiyahu Lamed Beis, this is like an Ein Muktam Ucher Batorah. Gemara has that principle. Rashi and Ramban debate how broadly it applies. Gemara has a principle. Sometimes there'll be stories in Tanakh that don't appear in chronological order. Because maybe something happened first, appear second, in the sequence of Rayin Chumash, because sometimes things are in thematic order rather than chronological order. So here you have it happen, not in Chumash, but in Sefer Yirmiyahu. Because take a look at Yirmiyahu Lamed Beis. Hadavar asher hayel Yirmiyahu me'is Hashem. The Shana, what year is this? The 10th year of Tzidkiyahu HaMelech, which is the 18th year of Nebuchadnezzar, right? Tzidkiyahu had been installed by Nebuchadnezzar. In the smaller font, it talks about how Yirmiyahu had been put into jail in Yerushalayim by Tzidkiyahu. He's kalu b'chatzara matarasha beis melech Yehuda. He was in the royal dungeon, sounds like, Yirmiyahu. Why? Because Tzidkiyahu did not like what Yirmiyahu had to say, so he censored him. Kala'o Tzidkiyahu melech Yehuda le'mar madu atana. Why are you being misnabe? Why are you telling us, Ko amar Hashem, hinino seina seir azos b'yad melech bavelu l'chada? You're coming around telling us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that we're going to be conquered by the Bavliim. Not interested. You're being unhelpful. I don't like your message. So, censoring things you don't like to hear by people in power is an old story. So Yirmiyahu was thrown to jail. Even though Yirmiyahu is telling them, you're not going to be able to escape the power of the Kazdim. It's not going to end well. You're going to be taken into Galus. If you try fighting, it's not going to work. Now is not time to fight. There was time to fight. Yishayahu had been in Yerushalayim with Chizkiyahu HaMelech, Tzidkiyahu's great-great-grandfather. And at that time, Yishayahu told him, Kadosh Baruch Hu said, even though it looks like it's all over, that was under a different superpower, looks like Sennacherib was going to sack Yerushalayim, Kadosh Baruch Hu told me you're going to be okay. Now Yirmiyahu says, well over a century later, that's no longer in force. Kadosh Baruch Hu told me we're going to be taken down. If you fight the Kazdim, it's just going to get worse. But Tzidkiyahu is not interested, so Tzidkiyahu throws him into jail. While he's in jail, he gets to Nevuah here at the bottom of the page. We are on the 32nd parak of Yirmiyahu. Yom Yirmiyahu, Hayo Dvar Hashem Elai Limor. Yirmiyahu got Nevuah. What was the Nevuah? That his cousin Hanamel is going to come. Hanamel ben Shalom Dodecha Bo'ei Lecha Limor. K'nei Lecha Asadi Yishai Banasos. Your cousin Hanamel, the son of your uncle Shalom, is going to come and say, I have a field in the town of Anasos, or outside the town of Anasos. Anasos was where Yirmiyahu and his family were from. And you should buy it. You should buy it. K'nei l'cha asadi, sheban asos, ki l'cha mishpat, ha'gul l'knos. You're the closest relative. You should be going to the field. You should buy the field. And then, and it seems like an unlikely thing for a person to do. The country is falling apart. It's imploding. The political structure of Eretz Yisrael is rapidly collapsing. What was the real estate market looking like? Not so good. Yirmiyahu himself is the one who's saying we're going to be taken to Galus. You're going to buy land? That's a bad investment. That's throwing money out the window. You're buying land for what? You're never going to use it. The real estate market was just the bubble hadn't burst yet. It was definitely about to. Why would anyone even make that suggestion? And why would anyone want to accept that suggestion? Yirmiyahu says, I got the Nevuah, and then boom, in walks Hanamel into where I'm jailed, where I'm being kept. And he says exactly that. K'nei l'cha asadi, asher b'anasos. Asher b'eretz binyamin, etc., etc. V'oidaki d'var Hashem, I understood that this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling me about, and he understood what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted him to do. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to do was take the deal. And not only does he take the deal, he mamish, like, jumps into it with full force. Ve'eknes ha'asod me'iz Hanamel ben Dodi, asher ba'anasos, I bought the field, I bought the real estate from my cousin, ve'eshkelo lo asa kesef, and I weighed out the money. Shiva shkalim ba'asar ha'kesef. 7 and 10. 7 shkalim plus another 10 smaller silver pieces. 10 mo. Echtov v'sefer v'echtom v'oed edim. I have it properly documented. Draft a bill of sale. It's signed. There are witnesses watching. V'eshkol hakesef v'moznayim. And I weighed the money in scales. So this is being done with full legal flourish, with full legal formality. And this may remind you a little bit of another very famous real estate transaction in Tanakh. Right, Maris Machpelah, right? The Over LaSocher. It was top quality cash. This is even more explicit. As a matter of fact, it's so explicit. This is the source. Maris Machpelah is the source for King Kesef. This is a source for much of the dinim of Shtar. The pasuk can go on. The last paragraph of Baba Basra has a lot about Shtaros. Paraget Pashut, it's not Mesechus Gittin. It's the last paraget, can more generally mean a Shtar. The last paragraph of Baba Basra is Paraget Pashut. Talks a lot at the beginning about different presentations, different models of Shtaros and Halacha based on these psukim, because he talks about taking the Sefer HaMikna, the Shtar Kinyan, Eshechasum, talks about the Galoy and the Chasum, different types. It sounds like they were drafting multiple types of Shtaros. And then he turns to his Talmud Muvak Baruch, V'etein Sefer HaMikna El Baruch Benaria V'machsia Le'enei Chana Meldo Dile'enei Ha'edim Aksuvim B'Sefer HaMikna. I turn to my Talmud Baruch, I give him the Shtar in the presence of the seller, Chanamel, the presence of the Aden, and in the presence of whom else? La'ene kol ha-Yehudim ha-Yoshim b'chatzar ha-Matara. In front of the entire group of Jews, and there were a lot of Jews that gathered to watch this. This is a major spectacle, and Yirmiyahu publicly turns to Baruch in front of everyone, and like in a stage whisper, it's kol ha-Mashem tzvakos, la'kol ha-Tzvar ma'ela, take these documents, put them in a clay jar so that they'll last for a long time. How many people here have been to the Shrine of the Book? Shrine of the Book. It's part of the Israel Museum in Yerushalayim. Oh, not too many people. So the Kedai to see. The Shrine of the Book is a museum that's dedicated to the Qumran scrolls that were discovered in the caves overlooking the Dead Sea. A couple of decades ago, there was a Bedouin shepherd who was roaming around with the sheep, ends up in a cave and discovers this clay jar, opens it up and realizes there's something very, there well-preserved scrolls inside. They end up, archaeologists come and find hundreds, I think thousands, of scrolls in multiple caves, many of them remarkably well-preserved, sealed in clay jars. So those scrolls are from the end of the Bayit Sheni period. We were talking just the other day, sort of a splinter group of Jews who had a somewhat distorted, in certain ways, very distorted variety of Yadas. So some of their writings are accurate, some of their writings are very, very original, but remarkably well preserved. From around 500 years or so, 500 years or so, after these Svarim that Yirmiyahu had written, but using probably the same technology, a sealed clay jar. So Yirmiyahu says to Binyamin, to Baruch, Yirmiyahu says to Baruch, put in a clay jar, Laman Yamd Yamin Rabin, so that it'll last for a long time. What's the point of this whole spectacle? What's the point of the show? What's the message? What's the message?
Buying a field,
okay. But, okay, so we really buy it, and why does the documents have to last for a long time? People will fake it later on. Okay, good. And what else? Do you see from here that there's such a thing as a Shtar Kinyan? Sefer HaMikna. Assume that means Shtar Kinyan. And that it can certainly serve as a Shtar Raya.
You come back.
Oh. Right. That he's saying, well, I might not. You're wondering, like, what are you doing? You of all people, like, you're investing real money. And investing so much effort to make sure it's legally binding. Who cares? Like, the whole thing is that it's a rigmarole. It's not going to mean anything. Nebuchadnezzar is going to come, destroy everything, and we're all done, but it's not going to mean anything. So, but exactly as you said, Kicho Amar Hashem Tzvakos, the very next pasuk. Elokei Yisrael, Od Yiknu Batim Sadot Tzuchamim Ba'aretz Hazos. Jews will yet buy real estate again, this land. We're going to be I'm never going to farm that field. My son will never farm that field. My great grandson is going to farm that field because we're leaving now, but we are absolutely coming back. Which is why it's so important to preserve those documents. And they say, my great grandson is going to need to be able to prove his claim to this piece of land. That's a very, very, talk about putting your money where your mouth is, literally. Right? He's investing money in a way that shows that we're yet coming back. And this is the message that's happening during the siege. Wow. Wow. And this comes back to the question I asked you before. Which episode in Esther takes place during the month of Tevis? Yeah? Maybe. Did it happen during Tevis? Oh, maybe. Is that true? I don't either. Got to check. I'm not sure. It definitely does not. You got to look and say from Malachim to see when Gaal Zichronim takes place. I do not remember. Can you give me something that happens that the Megillas Esther describes as happening take place during the month of Tevis? And let me add, by the way, unlike in Yirmiyahu and Malachim, we were reading before, where the month of Tevis is described as Chodesh Asiri, right? Only by number, because up until the Galus Bavel, in general, the Jews only used numbers to refer to the months. Every once in a while, you have Ziv. There are certain names that are used for months, but in general, the months were referred to by number until Galus Bavel. Gemara comments on that. Gemara points out that I think it's in Sanhedrin Chav Chaval that Shmos Hachadashim Olimam BiBavel. The Jews brought back the Bavli month names with them. Tammuz and Elul and so on and so forth, those were originally Babylonian month names that the Jewish people Bedavka adopted. It's a conversation for a different time, but that was the Ramban discusses and others discuss. That was based on that Gemara, that was an intentional takana by Ezra to make a zecher to the Geula from Bavel in the calendar. To build into the structure of the calendar a zecher to the Geula from Bavel, much as the Chumash tells us in Parashas Bo that the way the calendar months were named was a zecher to the Geula from Mitzrayim. So after the building of the Bayis Sheni, there was a need to make a zecher to the Geula from Bavel in the calendar. So that's why we have those names. That's why those names that we're familiar with only appear in the last of the Sifrei Tanakh. Sifrei Tanakh that date back to the period of Galus Bavel or later, like Megillas Esther, will use, you see the transition, it'll say like, you know, Chodesh Asiri, Hu Chodesh Tevis. So we're giving you Lahavdil, like, you know, it's 1 inch, which is also 2.54 centimeters. I'm giving you both ways of describing it. So what happens in Chodesh Tevis? What happens in Chodesh Tevis? Exactly. Very good. What are you going to say? So davar. Right? Esther is taken. What's the significance? And you know, we tend to, especially in the Megillah, we tend to often sort of ignore names, dates, places, but particularly dates. Sort of like we've been trained, unfortunately, sort of like just get to the meat of the story. But we do that at our own peril. If it appears in Tanakh, it's there for a reason. Consider for a moment that story. We tend not to focus on the taking of Esther, but imagine that you're alive then. Imagine that you were Mordechai's neighbor. Can you imagine what's going on in the neighborhood? What a tzara. It's like horrific. It's tragic. Esther was taken. Hadassah was taken to the palace. Tachashverosh. Ripped away from her family. Perhaps, according to some opinions of Chazal, ripped away from her husband. A holy Jewish woman taken to the palace. A vile king. Ugh. Such a tzara. And you haven't seen Shiva, so like, there isn't even any comfort. There's no way to close the circle. It's like so. Must have been hard to imagine how painful that must have been. Painful and also bizarre. Like Achashverosh, Ahadasah had many, many, many wonderful qualities. Many wonderful qualities that would have endeared her to a Ben Torah. But you know, her remarkable personality and her sparkling midos and her wonderful yiras shamayim were not the sorts of things that were, you know, qualities high in Achashverosh's list. It's quite clear from the Megillas Esther that Achashverosh was a very carnal, physical man who was interested only in physical attraction, and that's it. And the Sukkim sound like, and some people Chazal are very clear about, the fact that Esther was a remarkable woman in many ways, but physical attractiveness was not one of them. This is like bizarre. Like, and he's Achashverosh, again, in the most vile way, sifting through hundreds, maybe thousands of women from this, of course, this incredible empire, presumably bringing in all the most attractive women, and all he cares about is looks, in the most shallow way, and then Esther gets A, pulled in, and B, chosen. That also happens in Tavis. Right? Because it's a 12-month cycle. A year later, she's confirmed that she's going to be the queen. Like, tragic and bizarre, whole thing that doesn't make any sense. What on earth? Can you imagine the Navocha of the neighborhood? But there was a Gemara comment about that episode in Tanakh, that episode in Megillah. It's the Gemara's main comment about the taking of Esther. A very, very important Yisod in Hashkafa. Because by the refuah is kodemus lamaka. Gemara Megillah, you all learned it. Gemara Megillah says that before the tsar is even in place, HaKadosh Baruch Hu already has the refuah in place. Before the hit, before the problem, the solution is already. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is stage managing everything. But it's important, again, when we ignore the dates in the Megillah at our own peril. You have to realize there were years. The story of the Megillah ranges over almost a decade. So in retrospect, we see that the Megillah highlights a couple of episodes in the course of a decade. All of a sudden, the pattern becomes clear. But at the time, it was years before anyone understood anything. Esther was just sort of like hanging around, languishing in the palace for years, accomplishing nothing to the naked eye. Until years later, Haman comes to power. I mean, the Megillah sort of skips over those years because nothing's happening that's going to be mentioned in the Megillah other than Vixen Teresh. Right? But she's there for a long time. In retrospect, she said, no. What looked like incredible tsar. It was incredible, sorry. It was also the beginning of seeds of Geula. Kadosh Baruch Hu was already planting Geula at that moment. Esther is in place so that Klal Yisrael can be saved. Couldn't see at the time. Churban with seeds of Geula. That's the message of the Hananel story. Right? In the midst of, you know, we're always in jail. It is, as the Psukim stress, now he's in jail, but all of Yerushalayim is in a sense in prison. Right? They're all trapped in Yerushalayim. They're all in the middle of the siege, which began in Chodesh Teves. Yirmiyahu says everything is terrible. I'm in jail because I've been telling you everything's going to be terrible. There's going to be even more churban to come. The Yerushalayim will be sacked. It's eventually destroyed. But that's not the end of the story. But Od Yiknu, Jews will yet, but in the long term, with the long view, we're going to be back here again. We're going to be back again with another Beis HaMikdash, with a new community, with a new thriving economy. It's going to yet happen. Churban with threads of Geula. Churban with seeds of Geula. The truth is, Yechezkel is the third telling of the laying of the siege. That's on the second side of the page. Yechezkel is already in Bavel. Kadosh Baruch Hu tells him, I wanted Benavuah on Asar B'Tavis the same day. Yechezkel, at the beginning of Perek Chavdalad. Kadosh Baruch Hu speaks to him, B'Shana Atshias, the ninth year, B'Chodesh HaSir, B'Asar L'Chodesh Mamre, the same day. Asar B'Tavis of the ninth year of Tzidkiyah. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, Yechezkel, take out your diary. Make a note of today. That's what it says. Ben Adam, Kesov Ksav Lecha, Es Shem Hayom, Es Etzem Hayom Hazeh, Samach Me'al Bavel, Yerushalayim, Be Etzem Hayom Hazeh. Make sure to write down in your diary, this very day is a day that Nebuchadnezzar, a couple hundred miles away, began his siege on Yerushalayim. And then he adds something else. This is very, very important, very significant. Set it down, and he says, share this mashal with Klal Yisrael. You're in the pot.
pot. Some water gets poured into the pot. The meat gets poured into the pot. The meat's not going anywhere. The meat's not escaping the pot. You're in the pot. You're stuck in the place of Churban, and Rebbe Shalom is not going to let you out. That's a very frightening image. At the same time, even in the siege itself, the telling of the siege is a telling that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is surrounding you. In other words, it's terrible. It's going to be incredible suffering and anguish. Unimaginable. Baruch Hashem, we do not have the kelim to imagine the sort of anguish that was about to befall the Jewish people. But at the same time, understand that this isn't random. I'm the one who's doing it. And it's part of my larger plan. That is, I think, the message of Chodesh Teves in general. We're ready over time, so maybe some other time I'll share with you the Schneer Lyman, Dr. Schneer Lyman is starring as a whole Mahalach in the ninth of Teves. To make a long story very short, if you want, you can listen. So he has, I think, 7,000 hits on his YU Torah recording. I actually gave this talk in Beth Abraham in the year 2000, 17 years ago. It's fascinating, a fascinating hour. To make a long story very short, Beis Yosef quotes in the Bahag that there are additional days that tzaddikim fast on, two of which are the 8th and 9th days of Teves. Why? 8th day is a day that of the original translating of the Torah into foreign language, which was Chazal saw as an incredibly negative development. So that's why there were tzaddikim who fast on the 8th of Teves. And then you see in this Bahag here, the 9th of Teves, Lo kasu rabosein la mahu. Our chacham didn't tell us what we're fasting about. And bo b'yom meis Ezra koin nechem chachlia. And that's the day that Ezra Nechemi died. But obviously we're not fasting because of Ezra Nechemi, because we just told you that we're fasting for reasons that they didn't tell us what it is. And by the way, that's when Ezra Nechemi died. Very, very mysterious. To make a long story very short, he puts together hamon makoros, including the censored and uncensored version of Rashi and Avodah Zarah Daf Yud, which appears at the bottom of this page. Points out that there was this ancient tradition already several hundred, that Rashi is quoting from a sefer that's several hundred years older than he, which records a tradition from several hundred years before that, that the Sanhedrin, the Gemara tells us that the Sanhedrin was very concerned about the impact that early Christianity would have on Orthodox Jewish Balabatim. It was divergent also, like the Essene divergent group of Jews. They diverged more and more, but in many ways they looked outwardly like religious Jews. They kept mitzvahs, they came to shul, so often to the same shuls. That's why the Gemara says they were masak in the bracha of Lam al Shinim. That's why Shmona Esrei is no longer Shmona Esrei. The reason why they add the bracha number 19 is to have a bracha about the Ninim. The early versions of the bracha were much more explicit. A bracha that an early Christian wouldn't want to say. And so if they put you up to down for the Yamin, you don't want to say Lam al Shinim, so that made it pretty clear that you're not one of us. But that wasn't enough. So this ancient Medrash records a tradition that the early Sanhedrin felt they needed to do something to differentiate Christianity from authentic Yadus. And the solution they hit upon was they were going to send one of their own under deep cover to infiltrate the church and to slowly steer the church away, further and further away, in more increasingly visible ways, be very distinctly different from Yadus so there'll be no confusion. And you see in this last one, he talks about Paul and Peter, and that's what happened. And one of them is chosen, and he's basically, it's like Esther, but worse. And he's going to leave Klal Yisrael forever. If he ever reveals his identity, he totally destroys any impact that he's having. And he rises to become the Pope. And he steers Christianity further and further away from the practices of authentic Yadus, to differentiate more and more. But before he leaves, Klal Yisrael forever. Like he was privately Shomer Torah Mitzvos, but publicly never part of Klal Yisrael again. Like, can you imagine? Like the ultimate, in many ways, like the ultimate sacrifice. He's be living, not dying on Kiddush Hashem, but he's be living an ultimate sacrifice. He's living the rest of his decades of his life, cut off when the great Chachmei Torah, cut off from the rest of the Jewish community. So he says, I can never reveal myself again, but promise me at least that when I die, you'll do something l'zichri.
So Shnei Lion puts all the pieces together and points out, if you put enough pieces together, he has a lot of evidence, he thinks that's Tisha B'Teves. And that's why Rabbi Osenu didn't tell us what it's about. Because they couldn't. In earlier generations, telling us what it was about would destroy the whole effect of it. In later generations, it would have, at the very least, aroused the ire of the censors, if not much worse. But as though the hint is, well, I can't tell you what it's about, but Ezra Nehemiah died then. Well, not really Ezra Nehemiah, but someone else who died then. A different Jewish leader. And that's what this Rash, the uncensored version of Rashi, of Ozor David, speaks to. And if you think about it, that really is another example of this very, it's another Vatilakach Estar Malka happening in Chodesh Tevis. It's incredible Churban, but which ultimately leads to extraordinary Geula. And let's close with the following two things. Number one, my grandmother, Aleha Shalom, I remember as a child, she always used to keep Asar B'Tevis as Yartzeit for her family. She left Warsaw as a single woman to make Aliyah, and tried unsuccessfully to bring the rest of her family to Eretz Israel, and the rest of her nuclear family was, and much of her extended family, was wiped out in the Warsaw ghetto, or thereabouts. So she never knew exactly when her family perished, so she filed the takana of the Rabbanut to keep the Yom HaShana HaKlali, universal yahrzeit for all those who lost relatives in the Holocaust, didn't know on what day, to keep a yahrzeit on Asar B'Teves. The truth is that also speaks to this Teves theme of unimaginable anguish, unspeakable tsar on the national and personal levels that was followed just a few years later by almost unparalleled steps of Gula, almost unparalleled seeing Nevuahs happen before our eyes. And now we come back to the siege. And with this we close. So why are we be Misana over a siege? Okay, well, it's a siege. So, again, it was a terrible, sad thing, but doesn't necessarily seem to stack up to Tisha B'Av or Shemos HaBetamos, or even Tom Gedalia, when there was like real churban, nothing was destroyed on Asar B'Teves. Right. So what's the answer? The answer is, well, nothing happened on Asar B'Teves. No actual churban happened on Asar B'Teves, but it was the beginning of a process. Right? There was a process, obviously, that began on Asar B'Teves that played out and led to a Shivas B'Tamas and a Tisha B'Av. And that's what siege is. The whole idea of a siege, from a military standpoint, nothing happened when we lay the siege, but over, it puts, as the Pesukim say, we saw, right? It creates a rav, it creates famine, it slowly builds a certain type of situation. The siege, laying siege, is all about recognizing process. And recognizing process is also what the positive part of Tevis is about. The whole notion that there can be churban with seeds of geula within it is recognition that geula also is process. It doesn't say happen bin rega. Things take time. It's the way Kodesh Baruch Hu runs the world. It's not always, that's the way people, that's the way Kodesh Baruch Hu created us. We grow with process. Sometimes we shrink with process. Hopefully we grow with process. And Kodesh Baruch Hu runs his world with process. Geula, churban can come with process, and geula can come with process. And it's a recognition of the concept of process, which is what a siege is, which enables you also to see the positive aspect. Once you realize that things happen with process, that you can't just judge an event by what you see right now. Gotta play the long game. Gotta adopt the long view. The broader, wider, longer perspective, if you can see the process of Gullus, it enables you to see the even longer process of Gula. As I said before, Asar B'Teves is an important day. Asar B'Teves, in a sense, is a day to look forward to. Because it's Churban, but it's a marking of Churban with threads, with seeds of Gula. That seems to be the overall theme of Teves, and on multiple levels, the theme of the siege of Yerushalayim in particular. And that's a day to, presumably, part of the Avodas, to recognize the value of process in our own life, on our side of things, in our business, to recognize the need for process, and to think about how we can grow using process, with long-term goals, to grow gradually using long-term goals, and to understand, to instill within ourselves,
in the month of Tevis, in the day leading up to Asarim Tevis, to instill within ourselves that sort of perspective, to be able to look at Maaseh Hashem with a process perspective, to be able to see that Kadosh Baruch Hu is doing not always in the moment. Sometimes there are great moments you see, wow. But those bolts of light enable you to see that there's a bigger picture. These are some of the ideas I think of the month of Tevis in general, and of Asar B'Tevis in particular, that putting together Zechariah, Malachim, Yirmiyahu, Yecheskel, and Ovadia really build a sense of that theme.